Hello, listeners, travelers, eaters, drinkers. You're listening to On the Menu with Ann and Peter Haig, and we're talking to today's guest, Tolga Subdic, who is a partner in the Chance Restaurant Group and is an overall accomplished, fascinating person. Hey, Tolga, let's hear it for Tolga. Hello.
Hi, Ann. Hi, Peter. How are you?
Yeah, we're good.
Right here. And we're actually in Philadelphia. And I think you're somewhere hereabouts as well.
You're not in Philadelphia.
I'm not in Philadelphia. Okay.
You wish you were in Philadelphia. Contrary to what was his name, he said, I'd rather be here than in Philadelphia on his tombstone. I can't remember his name.
It was,
true.
Yeah. That's not what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about, first of all, you're verified experience, long experience, broadly experienced restaurateurs, you and your business partner, Rick Deschamps, and the group is called the Deschamps Group, is it?
It's Richard Deschamps Restaurant Group.
Okay. There, that's the full title.
Correct.
You both come from different but yet the same backgrounds. I mean, you're both experienced in the restaurant hospitality industry. Tell me how long you've been partners.
So, I mean, I met Rick when I was running this nightclub called Deja Vu Lounge in Strip District, Pittsburgh. And I used to, you know, work late nights and leave there like 4 a.m. And he used to own this small cafe called Cafe Richard right across the street from it. And when I leave at 4 a.m., you know, I used to see him coming in at 4 a.m. to bake all his bread and everything, get everything ready for his shop to open. And I used to bring a six-pack, and he used to make me sandwich. You know, talk about business, talk about things. That's how we met. And one day, you know, I started helping him out with his first restaurant, 909, in 2006. So I started helping him out as a general manager there. Then, you know, next thing you know, after 5 years working together in 2011, we opened our first restaurant, Meat and Potatoes, in Cultural District. And after that, just basically 12 restaurants after, we're still here as a partners.
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned to Rick when I was talking to him the other day, that his latest ventures with the sandwich place reminded me. I met him at that cafe, Richard.
Correct, King. Correct, yeah. That was one of the finest things he did. Those sandwiches were the best things we ever had.
That's true. Anyhow, that was a long time ago, and Meat and Potatoes was a smash hit. But you started on a roll and you've gone and you've gone and you've gone, and you now have how many restaurants?
Yeah, we are with the Rib Room concept. We have close to 12 restaurants at the moment.
Okay, and how many? They're mostly in Pittsburgh, but you also have some out of town ones.
Correct. So 11 of them in Pittsburgh. We are opening up another concept in Savannah, Georgia. We're working on that. We should be opening probably around like January, February.
Yeah, I mean, is there some short way you could run down, just for listeners to get the idea of the difference in concept? And I want to point out that each of these concepts comes not only with the food ideas, but also with the decor, which is Rick's bailiwick, right?
Correct. Yeah, so it's just, you know, when we opened Meat and Potatoes, actually, there was a, you know, not like a contest, but we had to go through a lot of applications because it's owned by Cultural Trust. You know, we had to sit in front of a bunch of donors and stuff trying to prove our concept. And there was a lot of people doing it because there was a turnkey operation. It was a great deal. You know, here's the keys. Here's a, you know, restaurant ready to go, basically. And our concept was a fine dining fish restaurant. Then after we won, you know, this basically the concept, our concept, and they gave us the keys for it, we went back to them. We said, you know what? I don't think this is going to work. You know, it was like the recession time. The economy wasn't doing well. You know, we say, you know, we might have to change the concept. But they trusted us. They let us change it. And we opened Meat and Potatoes Gastropop. So it was, so Rick always say, hey, we got to open up something that, you know, you walk by and say, hey, let's go eat there more than let's go eat there on our birthday or our anniversary or a special occasion. It should be something you walk by and say, hey, it looks fun. Let's go in and eat there right now. And that gastropop concept, it just, you know, took off, and it was really, really successful. I mean, it was, you know, being in the...
It's still one of your more popular, most popular restaurants, right?
It is, yeah. It's been 14 years. We were still there, you know, going strong. You know, after COVID, we changed some, you know, decoration. We changed some concepts a little bit. We did a little bit more, you know, steak-oriented. It was more meat-oriented and just a little bit more finer. Just to adapt with the, you know, downtown changes. But, yeah, it's been strong, one of our strongest restaurants still going through. And the next ones are, you know, just, you know, we were smart enough. We would open 10 Meat and Potatoes. You know, it would be easier for us. But Rick, I mean, Rick grew up here. You know, he loves Pittsburgh. And, I, you know, it's been home to me for the last 30 years. I came here for college and stay. And we love creating different things. We love creating things what the city needs. So our next concept was Butcher in the Rye. Then when the bourbon whiskey was really hot, then everybody wanted to drink bourbon, everybody wanted to drink whiskey, and we created Butcher in the Rye. After we created Taco, we opened up a barbecue place that closed after COVID. But just basically bringing different cuisines, different themes to the city and creating something different, you know, just every restaurant has its own decor, its own menus, its own, you know, different styles of dining, different styles of running these concepts. So it was, it's a little bit challenge, but it's something that, you know, make our restaurant group unique because, you know, we just didn't want to follow up on, you know, open up the new, you know, same concept over and over again, but more creating things of what Pittsburgh needs.
Yeah, I mean, I think we ought to sort of back up a little bit and say that your base is Pittsburgh.
Correct.
You know, so all of your early restaurants focus on Pittsburgh, but now you have some out-of-town places, right?
Correct. Yeah, I mean, most of them in downtown. You know, we have a location in Lawrenceville. We have a location in Garfield. And we went, you know, two locations opened up in Baker Square and kind of east of the city. And but then the one concept that we have is in basically Savannah, Georgia.
Right. So you continue with your list because they start getting more and more interesting. Go ahead.
So after, you know, downtown, we opened Butcher and the Rye, Taco. We opened up a sushi place called Gaijin. And we built a space. It's a beautiful space, but we couldn't find the right chef. It was during the COVID time, too. It was hard to find sushi chefs. We almost hired somebody, you know, paying crazy amount of money for 3 months to train us. But that person didn't find, you know, pan out. Then we finally run into Michael Taylor. He's our actually chef in Gaijin, also a chef partner at Golden Guy that we just recently opened up last year. And he's an amazing chef. So we basically opened up Gaijin with him. And Gaijin has been one of our another strongest restaurants. It's 33 seats, small, fine dining sushi. Not much cooking going on because there's not a kitchen. So pretty much everything is raw, except, you know, we use some items with like torch. But otherwise, everything is pretty much, you know, raw items. It's a busy restaurant. It's hard to get in. It's one of the popular restaurants we have. And we opened Sally Ann's, which is a lunch breakfast spot. It's on same 6th Street, same location, in the same street with Taco, Butcher, and Gaijin. And that's we named it after Rick's mom that passed away a couple of years ago. It's basically a breakfast lunch spot. And Play Blue is, which is our top restaurant that has been closed for 3 years. We have some water damages, but finally we are reopening after two damages we went through. We are reopening October 21st, so that's where I am right now, pretty much trying to get this restaurant ready. Fish Nor Fowl is in Garfield. You know, it's more like Italian pasta related restaurant. Taco Torta and Golden Guy is in two locations in Baker Square. Golden Guy is, we basically partnered with Michael from Gaijin and made him a partner at this restaurant because we knew how talented he is. And, you know, we knew he can actually cook more than just, you know, do sushi. and put a full kitchen in there. Same amount of seats, almost close to 33 seats, but amazing, nice kitchen. And he just, you know, he shines there with his hot food and sushi and everything. And Taco Torta next to Golden Guy, which is our another concept with taco, but it's more sandwiches and bowls, different menu. And recently we were also looking, maybe it might happen at the same week of Pollo Blue, open up a coffee shop, which is in Square Hill. It used to be Coffee Tree. The place closed up, and we made our coffee director, which name is Danny Ryan. You know, we met him when we opened Coupe de Ville because Rick and I didn't have much background on the coffee program. So we hired him. He was basically became our coffee director for all the restaurants. And we always knew Danny wanted to open up his own coffee shop with his own concept, his ideas. And, you know, Coffee Tree got available. We asked him if he wanted to be interested. He did. So we basically, three of us became partner. But one thing we added there, and we added a hood in there to make a full kitchen. So we turned from coffee shop to a restaurant. And we thought, you know, just coffee might be not enough profitable for us. Let's do some food to back it. That operations. So it's a concept that Rick's probably right now working, and we're going to open up probably in like 2-3 weeks. And it's going to be rotating food concepts. So the first concept is going to be like Italian sandwiches, and 2-3 months after, we might do Coupe de Ville fried chicken sandwiches. And maybe after that, we might do tacos, or we might do some sushi. So it's going to be rolling, changing concept on the food part of it, but the coffee will stay open 7 days a week. And Coupe Savannah is another concept that we're building. Should be done, but hopefully end of the year, then reopen that, you know, beginning of the year. So that's pretty much all our concepts at the moment.
Now, Rick is somewhat notorious for establishments to live in as well as the dining. Tell us about some of the crazier notions that you've been exploiting in the places where Rick has hung his hat.
Correct, yeah.
Go ahead. You're asking him about what, rather?
I just wondered if he was planning on doing the same thing.
With what?
With all these new ventures.
The same concept would probably be easier, you know, same marketing, same uniform, same menus, same website, same everything, you know. But we're a little bit crazy, you know, we love to create new things. We like to, you know, we love challenge. So that's why we create all these different concepts, you know. It's challengeable, definitely. It's hard, you know, because not like every chef, you know, it's different. Not like you can pull one chef from one restaurant, put him in another restaurant. And same thing with the servers, bartenders, because everything is different. Each restaurant has its own menus, every concept, even dress code and everything is different. So it was challenging, but we love it. We love what we're doing, and, you know, it's been a good success for us.
Well, you know, you have that kind of a wonderful partnership where you divvied up your talents in a way. Talk
Correct.
A little bit about that. I mean, I found out, because if I'll ask Rick something and he'll say that's a Tolga question, or I'll ask Rick.
Sure.
Tell us about that.
So, I mean, yeah, we have a great partnership. You know, I think that's one thing that Rick was missing. You know, he's talented. He's creative. You know, he's amazing chef. But, you know, when it comes to operations, he's like, you know, he just wants to be more creative, talent, you know, cooking. And he needed somebody that, you know, to run the operations, make sure day-to-day operations, you know, everything gets run by right. And that's what, you know, not many people knows, but Rick actually designs every restaurant for us. You know, there was not even one designer that we hired. So, you know, not many
and
people know.
Some of them he painted himself, too.
Some of them that he does the work. Yeah, I remember building meat and potatoes with a couple of credit cards, you know. It's me, him, and his brother. You know, we built the meat and potatoes really, really cheap. Then it became such a huge success for us that helped us reopen other concepts. So, but he's, you know, he is a creator. He comes up with the logos. He comes with design. He comes, you know, he designs a lot of things, many designs and papers, you know, business cards, logos. It's all him. And, you know, most of the things, even like the architectural designs, he's like, okay, I want the bar here. I want the tables here. I want this here, that here. Draws things that I grab that paperwork, basically turn into architect and turn into plans and turn into a permit, and we start building it. So that's what he's really, really good at, creative part of it, you know, anything creative aspect in the restaurants. And more the operations guy, you know, dealing with day-to-day operations, dealing with, you know, all the human resources. And but we have a great director team with us that, you know, just works for pretty much, you know, almost like a corporate level and works above all the restaurants that it basically my right hand, left hand, and same thing with Rick too. Without them, we couldn't be able to do anything. But the partnership has been successful because, you know, we start together, we leave together. It's not like, you know, one partner is in traveling, having a fun. And, you know, we always work together. You know, we're always there, same. We're just basically doing things together.
It's really exceptional. I mean, you don't find that very often, actually. I mean, I guess I've heard enough stories about partners' breakups that it's not even something that you can expect to endure in the restaurant industry, but you have. Let me back up a little bit. When you're talking about all these restaurants, you're hitting close to the kinds of things I want to talk to you about, is the survival in the industry. First of all these concepts, all these restaurants require a great deal of staffing, which is hard to come by in any field, let alone hospitality right now. Talk to us a little bit about how you handled that.
That's probably one of the biggest problems we run. I mean, increasing costs and everything, probably another one. But, I mean, the staffing, since COVID, you know, we lost a lot of talented, you know, passionate people. You know, after COVID, you know, there was such a break in restaurant business, and a lot of people went different directions, and we realized, like, hey, you know what? I might have a better lifestyle. You know, I work 8 to 5. Then I just basically come in, you know, come home and just spend time with my kids or spend time with my family, you know, my wife, girlfriend, whatever, boyfriend. So they realize that, you know, and the restaurants are good money maker for people, but then they realize the other industries start paying the same amount of good money too. So they decide, you know what, I'm just going to stick to it. And we lost a lot of talented chefs too. You know, there was a point in Pittsburgh, it was like the best food city. You know, it was great. I mean, there were so many talented chefs, and there's so many mentors, so many teachers there. We start losing them too. A lot of chefs start closing restaurants, or they stop doing what they want to do. They went into different directions. You know, I have a really, really want to admire chef, the talented chef that, you know, I used to go to his restaurant all the time. Now he's actually going to help us, you know, open Play Blue as a server because he wants to work as a part-time. So, you know, the staffing has been hard. I also feel bad for these new young people there who wants to be in the restaurant business. There's not many mentors left to learn from. You know, there's a couple of people left in the industry in Pittsburgh that you can go work for and learn from them. But the rest of them is, you know, not having the schools and stuff like that. So it's just, I believe in more learning from the, you know, because I had no restaurant background, and I started this business as a door guy in a nightclub, then became where I am right now by just learning and working in the restaurants. So the people we're getting right now is not passionable. You know, it's just, you know, their passion kind of is gone. I mean, it's, you know, not many people in the industry right now that want to open their own restaurants, open their own bar and stuff like that. So some people are just, you know, here for the paycheck, an easy job. But so it became definitely difficult for us. Before COVID, it was good. It was, you know, having this main restaurant was nice. You know, things were running itself. Now, you know, we pretty much have to be everywhere because finding people are hard. You know, I always say, you know, we used to have resumes on my desk. I'm like, okay, who am I going to hire for this position? Now it went opposite. Now they're sitting opposite way and saying, hey, I got all these restaurants. Where would I want to work? You know, this one has a parking. This one has insurance. This one, you know, has a better discount, or this one is that, this. So they basically decide where they want to work. And this pay, you know, this place pays 50 cents more. Or this place has a, you know, don't have a dress code that I can wear whatever I want. So there's, you know, that became a difficulty. I mean, that's, you know, staffing is definitely a hard thing. You know, I have somebody on staff that, you know, she's a recruiter for us, basically works part-time at home. All she does is basically sets up interviews, interview people, and sets up stages. So for us to, you know, because when you put an ad out there, hey, I'm looking for a bartender, you know, looking for the same bartender. You know, there's so many restaurants looking for the same position to fill in. So you almost got to be like the first one to reach out to. As soon as their resume comes in, you got to reach out to them right away. You got to set them up as a stage right away so they don't get a job somewhere else. Because we literally, when we see that one applicant, we all jump on it. And, you know, we just got to sell ourselves, basically, have them work for us. So it's been difficult. Yeah, since COVID, it's one of the hardest things we deal with. Second thing is probably the cost, you know, increasing costs, and not much we can do about it. You know, we got to keep our prices accordingly because we want still the customers to come in. We don't want to create a special occasion place. We want to make sure our restaurants are some places that you want to come in like a couple times a week and just, you know, hey, I love that burger. I'm going to go get it again because I'm hungry. Not because, oh, I love that burger. Let me wait for my birthday. So it's been difficult. It's been challenges, but we're trying to adjust ourselves, you know, trying to figure out, you know, different things and trying to survive.
Well, you know, I mean, we talk to people in major tourist centers and big markets, and I mean, they have problems too in the current environment, uncertain environment, economic and everything else. But I've been putting together some thoughts from people who are not in those major markets like New York, Chicago, San Francisco, Atlanta, you know, and find out how all of it has affected. Are there new problems that you're encountering? I mean, I guess cost would be one of it, just in terms of ingredients. But there has to be a lot of others. Everybody keeps telling me people don't want to work and that kind of thing. I don't really know what the core of all that is. Tell me your experience with how the current social economic situation has affected the middle and smaller markets in restaurants and hospitality.
I don't want to say they don't want to work, but I think they want to work less. That's, you know, that's one thing that I see. You know, I think people still got to work to make money, especially in our business. You know, if you don't work, you don't make the money. It's not like, you know, a lot of positions we have are not salaried. So, you know, if you're a server, you show up to work, and you work, you're going to make your money. If you don't show up to work, you call off, which is one of the biggest things we deal with is call offs, then you don't make the money. I think we got a little bit lazy during COVID. You know, we just got handed things to ourselves, you know, without doing, you know, money, you know, was handed to us, you know, hey, you have a kid, here's some more money. Hey, you want, you know, making this much money, here's some more money. I think we got a little bit lazy. You know, there's talks about, hey, let's go to 5-day work week to a 4-day work week. Just, you know, instead of going 6-day work week, we should be working harder. We want to go less. Or, you know, like I don't see, our restaurant used to be open till midnight. Some, you know, Friday, Saturdays in downtown. Now we're doing 10 o'clock, and I can see some of the employees' faces like, you know, why we don't close at 9 o'clock? So it just, I think it's not laziness. It just, I don't know what it is. You know, it's hard to explain. But not just restaurant business. It's everywhere. You know, it's from delivery guys to repair guys to everything, you know. But it's also, I feel like it's a great opportunity for somebody that can make, you know, good money, be really successful. Because not everybody wants to work hard, you know. When you work hard, you know, you just do whatever you want to do, make it harder, work hard, and I think you can make really, really, really successful because everybody else is not doing it. So you almost, like, single yourself out. You can be really, really successful in the restaurant business if you just, you know, work harder and make things better. I feel like, you know, because not everybody wants to do it. Everybody wants to kind of look into, this is enough. Our goal is, you know, let's make it, you know, as hard as it gets, but let's work harder.
Right. Well, you know, the public awareness of the whole industry, though, I mean, they just debuted another restaurant chef competition from the CIA. I mean, I talk to people who have no involvement with the industry, no basic interest in the industry at all, who were fascinated by these TV shows. Why?
Yeah. And they, you know, the TV shows definitely don't help because, I mean, do you see, you know, what, you know, everybody comes in, you know, you graduate from culinary school, you come in, you know, I mean, a lot of people start in the restaurant. I mean, I know Rick started as a dishwasher, you know, his uncle's restaurant. So he didn't come in and say, hey, I'm going to be the sous chef, I'm going to be the line cook, I'm going to be the executive chef. I think these shows a little bit affected. I mean, that it looks good when you're the chef of that place, but you got to kind of earn it, you know, and I feel like that's not happening. You know, everybody walks into our restaurant sometimes looking for the high rate, looking for the title, looking for, you know, hey, I won't do this position. I want to do this position. You know, it's change. You know, it's just, I mean, the things change. I mean, the way Rick used to tell me stories how, you know, these chefs used to treat them and stuff, that changed too. You know, if we see something, you know, the way we talk to employees now, the way we treat them now, it's all changed. You know, if somebody makes a mistake, you know, Rick used to tell me old school, you know, the chef used to, you know, say all kind of things to him that you don't want to say.
Yeah.
But now we're like, hey, would you mind recook that steak for us because it looks a little bit overcooked, and or next time can you be a little bit more careful? That's how we talk now, you know. So I don't think that helps. I feel like, I mean, I don't think anybody should be treating y'all anything, but I don't think it helps these people to grow, become a better chef.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, are people still eating out at the same rate or not? I mean, I know they're all drinking less, and when I owned a restaurant, I worried when the drinking income dropped below the food income.
Definitely dropped. You know, the younger, I mean, we see the change. The younger, you know, coming in, that 21, 22, 23, they're not drinking as much as maybe the, you know, the 3 years older than that crowd. I mean, I can see the difference definitely. And the food is also, you see, I think it's just, if people, you know, don't want to, I mean, it's expensive. You know, the things are expensive. We're trying to keep our costs really, really low. We're trying to, you know, be creative on things. But I mean, yeah, definitely, you know, I see some of our restaurants, like downtown, we're busy, like old times, when there's a show or an event going on. But on a normal night, sometimes we're not as busy as we used to be. And I think the food definitely went down. As simple as I tell you, people used to eat till midnight. Now our latest restaurant closed at 10 o'clock, you know, and everybody wants to eat between that 7 o'clock and 8:30 hour. So, you know, if you can't get anybody earlier or if you can't get anybody later, you're not hitting the numbers that you want to hit. So, yeah, I see the drinking definitely down. That's been proved. And the food is also, I think it's following that.
Well, but you don't have a traffic problem. I mean, you hire armed guards to kind of control the crowd, don't you?
Yeah, we do. Some restaurants, yeah, definitely, you know. But, I mean, there's, you know, like I say, if it's almost becoming like a special dining, almost becoming like a special occasion, which is sad, you know, because I don't know where people are going to eat. You know, I go to some of the chain restaurants, you know, so I have a couple favorite restaurants I love to eat, and I go to them, and they're slow sometimes, and you think that, you know, they're the one that you should be busy. If these fine restaurants not busy, you'll think they'll be busy, but they're not busy either. So it's just, the Friday, Saturdays are busy, but then you get them Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, not busy as what you used to be.
Now, I mean, where do you go when you've saturated the market, which if you might be getting close to that in Pittsburgh, right? I mean, do you try to get tourist trade or what?
I mean, the Pittsburgh is, you know, became when we were really, you know, that when we were talking about that food town, you know, it was like the best place to eat in the country. It was became almost like a tourist destination because, I mean, if you think about it, and, you know, when you travel, what do? You make, you know, you go to New York City, you make a dinner reservation. You go to Chicago, you make dinner reservation. So dinner is a big part of your trip. You know, you always make those reservations. Even though you're going for some other reason, you know, I might be traveling for a Steeler game, away game, but I make dinner reservations or the birthday party someone, you make dinner reservations. It's a dinner always been a part of the thing. And the Pittsburgh is, you don't see much travel anymore. You know, it's just like, you know, the football season is back. So, you know, there's usually we're busy the day before a home game because a lot of other towners comes in and stuff like that. But, you know, you don't see much travel to Pittsburgh. You know, new airport opening, hopefully that will help us, you know. But, I mean, we'll see. You know, we just need more people coming to Pittsburgh for some reason. So we don't see much tourists. So you just basically, what do you have, 350,000 people living in Pittsburgh? You basically, you know, everybody's trying to cater to those people, and it just makes it difficult for us.
Well, now, what do you do by way of marketing?
What do we do for marketing?
Yeah.
I mean, our marketing always been, you know, word of mouth. You know, that's why, you know, when it's our success always been, you know, we don't advertise much on, you know, magazines or any, you know, you don't see our ads on the buses. Ours has been always word of mouth. So we just got to make sure, I tell my employees always, I want everybody walking here 99.9% leaving happy, you know. It just, that's our biggest marketing. You know, when somebody comes in, we treat them well, we give, show them the hospitality, they're going to tell different, you know, 10 different people and, you know, 20 other people, they're going to tell their family and friends. That has been our success all these years, just getting, you know, people in to come back. But, you know, it's just trying to be different, trying to do things, you know, trying to be different than other restaurants. You know, you don't want to offer too much because it hurts you on the bottom. You know, you don't want to give me too many discounts and stuff like that. Just to be creative, you know, trying to come up with different ideas, different things, different special dinners and different combinations. You try to just basically do things that people not used to, and it's something new to them, so they'll keep coming to our restaurants.
Go ahead.
Danny Meyer became known throughout your industry because he wrote a book, and it was a very clever and a very entertaining book. But he said something very interesting in his book. He said people asked him who the most important people are to the restaurant, and he said he assumed that Danny would say it was the chefs. But he said, no, that's not the answer. The answer is the success comes from the people who run the restaurant.
Correct. I totally agree with him. I mean, it's the people that, who, you know, deal with customers day to day, every day. You know, that's, you know, it starts, Peter, from the host team. You know, you walk in, the way they treat you, the way they smile at you, the way they talk to you, the way they, you know, handle you. It starts from there. If you have a valet service, it starts from the valet service, the way they handle your car, the way they open your door. So it just starts from the valet or host, then ends with the host again. So I always tell my host team, it's like you're the face of the company, of the restaurant, because when they walk in, the first thing they see is happy you. If they see you miserable you, they're going to get that miserable vibe. And so that's what is important. And same thing with the servers, same thing with the bartenders, same thing, you know, the manager on the floor, you know, anybody handles, you know, I believe in, you know, anybody handles a service. I believe in, you know, you might have an okay food, but you have an excellent service, excellent hospitality, you're going to go back to that place. You know, so that's, I agree with him saying that, you know, the people who handles, runs a restaurant, deals with customers day to day, they're the most important people.
Yeah. Listen, Tolga, you and I, and Peter can go on talking for a long time, but I want to make sure you let our listeners know your website to get all the information on your restaurants, how to get there, how to get in, so forth. Can you do the website?
Sure. It's richarddeshantz.com. It's Richard, DESHANTZ.com. You know, that's our restaurant group website. There's links to all our restaurants. There's a little story about us. Everything is there. You'll be able to make, you know, reservations. You can request events and all that stuff. So everything is pretty much there that you'll be able to read about us. It's richarddeshantz.com.
Okay, well, anyhow, I mean, you are successful. So all we can do is wish you continued success in what I view as a very constricting market. It's always tough running a restaurant, but it's right now it's hard to figure out even what your costs are going to be, everything from wages to a product. So continued success, and I hope you're still enjoying yourself in the future. Thanks a lot, Tolga.
Thank you, guys.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. Thanks for the call.
Podcasting services for On the Menu Radio are provided by ASP Station, www.aspstation.net.